Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. Thank you for joining today's episode. We're on a mission to share e-commerce logistics insights, trends, successes, and challenges from the leaders and innovators in our space.
The good news is there's a ton of low-hanging fruit. So if you don't have any cartonization, use bad cartonization. It'll get you, you know, at least some of the way there to get you started and help you, you know, keep your margins intact as all these transportation costs and material costs are shooting through the roof.
Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. This episode, Ninad and I welcome James Malley, founder and CEO of Packurate. Fun fact about James, he's another one of us that didn't seek a career in logistics. Logistics found him. He went to theater school before finding his passion for tech and logistics. He's known in the industry as a cartonization magnet. James, it's a pleasure to have you joining us today, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. We're equally excited to have you. I think today we really want to crack the nut on why there's so much air in the packages we receive on our doorstep every day. But first, theater school to logistics, that's quite a life journey pivot. So would love to hear more about that and have you share your story from center stage and bright lights to packaging APIs.
Yeah, I think theater school, well, let me just first say, I don't regret it at all. I learned a lot about storytelling and communication and minored in computer science, just in case that whole acting thing didn't work out. And it was kind of, when I was younger, I was kind of just doing, I didn't have like a lot of forethought into what I was, the decisions I was making. And there were other examples of that, like during school, I went and I decided to work for a hotel in Times Square, being an overnight bellboy. And then from there, a rap magazine group stayed there and asked if I wanted to leave the hotel and travel with them to be an assistant. And so that kind of like, that kind of attitude was like really me getting out of my system, this sort of, yes, I'll do whatever seems interesting at the time. But anyway, by the time I graduated theater school, I realized that I enjoyed the, you know, making websites for off-Broadway theater companies more. And you can't really make it as an actor if your heart's not totally in it, because it's kind of a thankless profession, especially at the beginning. And that kind of led to logistics tech. And that's what where I've been in ever since around 2009.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I love that you found your passion, right? And it led you to this amazing space that we're in. I would love to just jump right into it, as we talked about trying to crack the nut on why there's so much air in the packages we receive every day. So let's jump right into it. There's so much noise today about inefficient packaging, which as online customers, most of it see it every day on our doorstep. We open our online orders and we see it glaring right in our face. It's air, space, or massive amounts of packaging filler. And for me personally, it affects me negatively as a customer, my experience, because as a logistics guy, I see just wasted revenue. I see dollars being thrown out. And as someone who cares for the earth, I know it's not good for the environment. So would love to hear you kind of scope for us, like how big of a problem is this? Why is it still here in 2022, which kind of blows my mind?
Those are all really big questions. But I think just to your point, as a consumer, you don't even really need to be in logistics to look at a giant box that showed up on your doorstep with a tiny thing rattling around in it and kind of intuitively understand that this is wasteful. I mean, the material is right in your face, but it doesn't take a huge logical leap to realize that it took up more space, more precious space in the transport network than it needed to. And there were costs and emissions associated with it. So, and that's kind of how we got into the space, is companies, shippers struggling to control their packing step. I think in terms of scoping it out, it kind of comes down to the fact that the packing mistakes you're talking about are the most visible from the consumer side, but they're only the tip of the iceberg, because most shipments are around 50% air and up to 64% air in some product categories like housewares and things like that. And that's based on a number of studies done by packaging providers that, you know, we've kind of dug into. But also we've seen kind of, it's true when we go in and analyze the potential savings or emissions reduction opportunity at any shipper, those numbers are pretty right. So it's not just the one that when you get it at home, you're like, well, they don't care at all. It's really the ones that we get that look fine are actually, there's a potential to really make them more efficient.
And actually, what drives it, James? Like, where is it coming from? Of course, the person that's packing it can see that they are packing a toothpaste in a big box, right? Or a little thing in a big box. There is visibility around weights and dimensions that I would assume that these shippers have as to what they are shipping and how much corrugate they are utilizing. I would assume there is some analytics that's available. So why are we still seeing that happen on a consistent basis? If I'm receiving 3 boxes a day, your statistics, you know, derived from the packaging industry, I can tell you as an individual, of course, statistically not relevant, but still as an individual, I see out of 4 packages, yes, 2 have air, a lot of air. And then you do, of course, see some that are really well packed. Like, what's driving it? Why does that happen?
Well, really, 3 things. One is humans are frankly just really bad at looking at 3-dimensional space and understanding what they're looking at. And we can attest to this. We look at cartons all day long and marvel over what we think are great packing jobs because we're nerds. And it will be like, wow, that's a beautiful pack. It must be 90% cubic utilization. And then we look at the stats and it's actually like 70. So we're just really bad at conceptualizing 3D space. The second reason is that in the warehouse, you know, as you know, the packer has a prime directive to get the shipments out the door as fast as possible. So to do that, expediency is kind of overrides some of these decisions that might be a little bit smarter. Sometimes there's supply chain issues. It's not the packer's fault. Could be they don't have the right box or whatever. And then the third reason is that historically, kind of the solutions that you could put in place to prevent this, to try to control the packing process, generate instructions and stuff. This is a type of solution or feature called cartonization. They've been kind of built as an afterthought. So a legacy load planning software that focused on, you know, trailers and requires somebody to sit there and drag things onto a pallet and a visual interface. They'll release a parcel specific product, but it's kind of as is. They might add some features. Or on the WMS side, WMSs have to go a mile wide. And so it's hard for them to go more than a few inches deep on any one point. And it just so happens that cartonization is one where you need to go extremely deep, deceptively deep, in order to do it correctly.
Yeah, and you know, I'll speak to a little bit of my observation on that side as well, right? In most warehouse implementations that I've worked on, there is always the good intent of even that inch deep capability of a WMS that you speak to has some value to it, but it starts with garbage in, garbage out, right? Like there is, for you to be able to do good cartonization, to be able to tell the packer, use box size number 32, right? And I'll come to the fact that you can't have 32 boxes in a warehouse as well, just because how much space it utilizes, etc. But it starts with getting good data into the system. It's when the item arrives at the warehouse, making sure, and it sounds like really rudimentary, scan the item, figure out what the dimensions of the item are, what kind of package does the product actually come in, get additional information around, is this a crushable item, is this a stackable item, is this a nesting item, right? Is this something that has cavity, etc.? And then taking that data and then determining. The amount of times that I see this situation evolve where new implementation or existing warehouses, I just recently heard an example where walk through a multi-million dollar warehouse and you see 10 dimensioning machines just sitting there, no one using it. And my experience has been, if someone comes in with the CubiScan machine or another dimensioning solution, as soon as operation starts, that's the first thing that gets dropped. And that translates into garbage in, garbage out. If you do not have good dimensional data, if you don't have good volumetric data, if you don't have weight data, then systems can only go so far as to what it can do in making recommendation. And on the flip side, when you don't have that data, you leave it to the human decision making. The system does not know what box to recommend. It's doing some sort of attempt. But then on the other side, you have the packer making a decision to something you said. We are really poor at, you know, visualizing 3 dimensions. at that point, the user is just going to choose whichever box makes sense to them. Now, once I've built that box, because they all come flattened, I'm not changing my decision. And the box goes down the pack line, end of story. You got a bunch of air in there, right? Like, at least that's been my observation. Of course, you speak to a lot of people. Like, are those things kind of touching? And
absolutely. It has gotten a lot better in the past few years with when we first start talking to a shipper, they will have already collected or tried to collect dimensions and put a process in place. But a lot of them are still looking for, okay, how do we build this into our process and kind of a way that's not going to disrupt anything. But it's definitely kind of a recent switch from let's focus on hardware, material handling, cool new technology to wait a second, we gotta go back to basics a little bit, look at some foundational issues. And knowing what the shape of the things you're shipping are, that's pretty foundational for any of that stuff to really work as well as it needs to.
And I'm going to tee this up for both of you because this is not my wheelhouse, but I've heard and would love your thoughts on this. Companies like Amazon, they might not be so concerned with the void in a box because they're more concerned with how the boxes fill the cube of a container that they're loading for outbound shipment. And then you have common carriers that have, obviously, we're all very familiar with dimensional weight. So when I say, you know, we're throwing dollars out the window, it's not that we're just spending extra dollars on corrugate or extra dollars on void fill. Shipping costs are just, you know, a big piece of that revenue waste stream that we see. So how complex is this? You know, the carriers have different dimensional weight categories. Marketplaces, Amazon has a different strategy, it seems like, on what's important to them. So would just like to, I want to learn from you guys, like, how do we unpack that? What's the problem and how does it get solved?
How do we unpack that? I see what you did there.
You like that?
Well, I guess a quick point on Amazon, we can kind of get a little glimpse into how they think about it because they actually write about it publicly on their Amazon Science website. And so, you know, cartonization, been thinking about it for a long time, obviously. Analysis programs where they can figure out what carton sizes they should be using in their locations. But to your point, they're optimizing for Amazon, which is completely different than any other shipper, even any, you know, the large other retailers. They don't have the same cost structure. And to your point, they're prioritizing speed more than anything. That's a little, you know, personally upsetting to me because the average Amazon box, that's what people complain to us about when they're trying to understand what we do. And so I can only imagine the sort of emissions ramifications of that decision to focus on speed. I don't know what they do about it, but it's got to be, I mean, how much of the supply chain do they control? And they've got probably worse utilization than many shippers out there.
Absolutely. And I think there is the aspect of Amazon's not like your traditional warehouse, right? Like they have a warehouse that has items that are sortable. They have a warehouse that where items are conveyable. They have a warehouse where items are bulk. They have a warehouse that does a lot of electronics mixed with some other stuff, right? Hazmat is separated. While from a consumer behavior perspective, you are buying from Amazon. So you would assume it's a mixed basket. Everything comes together. You see that the boxes that you get at times are not the same cart that you closed. You end up getting different stuff coming to you. Now, let's take that particular solution that it is multi-item, single basket, being shipped in multi-boxes when you're purchasing a lot of stuff. They are coming from different warehouses. Each of these warehouses have to store, and I go back to that example of box number 32. You can't have 32 boxes available inside the warehouse. So now you are optimally designing 5 or 10 or 12 or 15 boxes per warehouse that's going to accommodate all the inventory that's inside a given warehouse. And the items that might be coming to us don't fit the amount of quantity that's required. And now you got a box that was the only box that they could choose. And yes, in some cases, it's also manual intervention. It is still the same problems that you see in traditional warehouses play out. The person, you have to spend time to build a box. When you build a box and you realize I built the wrong box, you're better off just shipping it out because efficiency, the total number of packs per hour also matter to those warehouses. So the cost of actually choosing another box, and it's Amazon. To them, from a pricing standpoint, a small box versus a medium box does not make that big of a difference. And I think it's a multitude of things that go into it. But definitely from James's perspective, right? Like, he's done more research on this than I have. This is all my assumptions looking at warehouses of what's actually happening over
there. Yeah, to be clear, I think there's probably very good reasons for the way they pack. I just also believe that it's a problem. And Dan, you mentioned other shippers that deal with UPS and FedEx. One of the things that we realized early on when we were building our solution is that the carriers incentivize packing a certain way, depending on where you're shipping something, what carrier service you're using, all those things. Building in that kind of awareness is an extra step on top of the 3D Tetris of fitting these things together, where you're saying, okay, this is an air shipment. We care way more about reducing the air in the box. We're okay with adding an additional box to fit all these items. Whereas if you're shipping it a zip code over, it may be, you know, FedEx doesn't want their delivery guy to juggle 1,000 boxes. So it's okay to have a little air as long as everything's consolidated. So that kind of speaks to the depth of the problem. It's related to a bunch of other parts of supply chain. It's not just, let's find a small box.
That's a really good point, James. And I think obviously what we've just uncovered is it's a huge problem. It's a complicated problem. And I was reading over a report you published, Packurate published in August. And I pulled out this, you know, an interesting statistic that you wrote. And I think this is really relevant for our audience and for brands or 3PLs. And the quote was, for a business fulfilling 25,000 orders per month, good cartonization system can deliver an estimated savings of nearly $28,000 per month just from improvements to packaging optimization. So that is substantial, right? I mean, you're talking about a dollar plus per order, per package that goes out. And that's really meaningful on a monthly and annual basis. So it seems to me like low-hanging fruit, right? I mean, it just seems like one of those just do it type things. But we just talked about how complicated it is, right? And how many nuances there are in trying to crack this nut. So I guess my question to you is, you know, with the significant savings that's possible, what is preventing the masses from not hopping into this and jumping in and getting it done?
Well, I think there's awareness is definitely growing. So we see shippers that come to us having already sort of attempted some sort of cartonization building of their own because their WMS wasn't doing the job or, you know, whatever it is. What we do is try to simplify this otherwise pretty complex problem and make it kind of a set it and forget it. But we're not the only ones going after this. I mean, there's some really cool other kinds of solutions. I just met the founder of a company called, I think it's Rabot, where they have a machine learning camera that sits over the pack station and tries to call out, mistakes and other kind of optimizations that could happen. I know, you know, several packaging companies are leaning into the fact that this last 100 feet in the warehouse is, there's a lot of hidden value in there and it does not get enough attention. So I think we'll see over the next year plus a huge focus on this as I said, as a foundational issue that needs to be solved, not just one of 100, you know, fires that needs to be put out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, we're in a economic period right now where there's some uncertainty. There's risk for everyone in the space. So everyone's looking for how do I obviously increase my revenue? How do I keep the orders flowing out of the warehouse? And at the same time, what are the opportunities to reduce costs? So, I mean, here, you know, in your example in this report from August, you know, a merchant that's sending 1,000 orders a day has the opportunity to save, you know, over $250,000. So whether it's a solution like Packurate or some of these other innovative solutions that you're finding in the marketplace, I'm just curious, like if I'm a mid-market brand today, what is a potential ROI, right? I've got a lot of fires. You just said it, right? There's a lot of things going on. But if I'm looking at this as some low hanging fruit, what's the timeline to implement? What's the cost? Do I typically see an ROI? And, you know, how fast do I get that dollar per order savings dropping to my bottom line? Are we talking 30 days, 60 days, maybe 6 months? Looking for your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I can talk about what we've seen without specifically shilling for Packurate. The good news is there's a ton of low-hanging fruit. So if you don't have any cartonization, use bad cartonization. It'll get you, you know, so at least some of the way there to get you started and help you, you know, keep your margins intact as all these transportation costs and material costs are shooting through the roof. We see as high as 22% reduction on shipping costs if you don't have any cartonization. If you have, you know, a legacy kind of 3D cube cartonization that you've cobbled together and you move towards a rate aware solution that's trying to pack for your specific fulfillment costs, we see a 6% transportation saving. So that's pretty, you know, 6% doesn't sound like a lot, but it's pretty big at scale. There's at least a square foot of cardboard per carton that's easily eliminated. So I like to play these little thought exercises all the time with like, what would it mean if Packurate were to like cartonize every shipment in the world? These are the things I think about as I'm falling asleep. Because FedEx and UPS, they ship, I think it's 40 million, or they deliver 40 million packages per day worldwide. So let's say a Packurate was able to do, you know, cartonize half of them. Let's be conservative and say half. So if we're reducing a square foot of cardboard per carton, that's 20 million square feet of cardboard per day. Per year, that's enough to cover every, you know, a major American city in cardboard. So there's just a massive amount of potential here. So I would say just do something. I mean, you know, the state of things are probably worse than you think. I guess a more positive way of saying that is the opportunity may be greater than you think to do optimization on the packing step. In terms of Packurate, you know, we're an API-based product. We built it so that it'd be easy to plug in, that kind of augment your existing system. So it takes like 2 weeks to do, in most cases, the actual implementation.
James, for between FedEx, UPS, all other carriers, right? Is dimensioning and choosing the right carton, do you make that decision based on the carrier that you are going to ship? And how important is that decision if you are making that decision?
We do, and you should, because they don't have the same incentives. Their, you know, their rate structures are different. It brings up kind of interesting implications, like if you have rate shopping as a part of your kind of fulfillment and shipping flow, you shouldn't necessarily be rate shopping the same packing configuration against the same packing configuration. Because it may be that FedEx wants you to put this shipment in one large box and one small, and UPS wants three medium or whatever. You need to be comparing apples to oranges to truly find which is actually the lowest cost. So anyway, that, I mean, this is fairly advanced stuff. Cartonization in general is already kind of a niche space. And that kind of cost awareness stuff is what we've really drilled down on. But you can also work with your carrier. They are starting to really advocate for better packing. It's not just the, you know, the penalties for doing it poorly anymore. It's like, as part of the relationship, they have packaging labs and to help their customers reduce damage and all these things. So the resources are really out there to get started.
Absolutely. And to that point that you made, if you don't have cartonization, use bad cartonization, but use
that.
Cartonization. But if you do have bad cartonization or good cartonization, I think the next step is to try and figure out how do you make that decision of which carrier are you going to choose? But then based on that, what box should you choose, right? And that does get pretty complex at that point, because that decision making has to be dependent on how are you going to pick your order and how are you going to pack your order. And you got to take it all the way upstream, almost at the point of order creation. When you get the order in the system, you need to validate, here's one configuration for FedEx, here's a configuration for UPS or whichever carrier, right? And check for the rate for both of them, figure out which one is the cheapest, then come back and say, okay, I'm going to use this configuration and make your picker and packer follow that particular configuration path. And that gets, I would say, pretty complex.
It's a little in the weeds. I mean, that's what we try to do. And I guess that's a great example of how this is a problem where you can go really deep on. And it's not that the WMSs can't build cartonization. It's just to go deep enough to optimize fully on this one point would make their products incredibly lopsided. because they're trying to put together an end-to-end process that's efficient. And in terms of the brilliant developers at those companies, they can't spend enough time working on these features.
And I think there is a recognition in the market as well, right? Like most new good WMSs are now starting to come with available APIs to kind of hook in capabilities like this, right? Like where we understand we are not good at, you know, perfect example I like to call out is rewind 10 years ago and every major WMS provider had their own multi-carrier rating kind of system built in. They got to a point, be like, this is way too much work. This is not our specialization. And they said, here's a bunch of APIs. Go work with folks that have much deeper expertise. And the industry blossomed. I think that it's not even 10 years ago. I think 2016, 2017 is when we started seeing that in the market. We are seeing that and they are like, okay, this is a great strategy to have this ecosystem of providers that can come in and plug and play with us. And we are now starting to see that with, you know, there are packing screen APIs that you can make outward calls and start putting cartonization in there or hooks into like, waving, allocating, batching type capabilities within warehouses. The exciting times are actually ahead of us when we start talking about let's use best-in-class plug-and-play capabilities to make my operations very efficient.
And I think too, like listening to you guys talk, obviously there's all the optimization opportunities, there's the cost savings. But James, to go back to the example you brought up about if your solution was applied to half of the volume, right, for UPS and FedEx alone. Like, just think about how good that is for the earth, right? I mean, like, yes, there is everything. My logistics brain is like on fire, but at the same time, it's just like, why aren't we doing, like, this should just be table stakes for everybody because it is just what we need to do because e-commerce volume is going to continue to grow. The problems potentially, if not solved, only going to become more massive and more in our face. So I think we all have an obligation to crack this nut and do something about it. It's good for the bottom line. It's good for operations. It's good for cost savings opportunities. But we should all feel good about doing it too, because it's what's right for planet Earth.
Absolutely. I mean, my team is very motivated by this idea that we could put a dent in some of the waste in supply chain. And I think it's kind of a rude awakening a little bit when you start digging into the data of how bad things actually are. We try to, you know, from a packaging standpoint, we're like, oh, we'll do paper fill and, you know, cardboard's better than plastic. And the truth is it is, but not by as much as we would hope. I think it's 1 ton of cardboard creates 3 tons of CO2 equivalent to create. We're great at recycling cardboard, but that's not carbon neutral by any stretch of the imagination. And so the answer is to reduce, which is kind of like the least sexy of the three R's. Right. but that's the answer. And I think, you know, some of the best partnerships we've had with shippers is when that's their focus, kind of unironically, not for a marketing standpoint, but there are people in there that actually really care because they see the waste all day long. And so what we're able to do is say, okay, if you pack this way, if you use these specific cartons for the next 3 months, you'll, you know, reduce the number of floor loaded trailers you need by 14%. And the retailer I'm thinking of, that was 400 trailers annually. You'll reduce the amount of cardboard you use by, I think it was like 113 acres this year. So those are the partnerships where we're able to like just totally geek out with them about doing tiny tweaks because the economies of scale are so large, you can have a tremendous impact on scope 3 emissions specifically.
I love that. Love that. And obviously to that point, there's 3PLs, there's brands where, you know, this is their mission statement. There are 3PLs and brands today where, you know, this is their mission statement. Like they are out to solve this problem and they're out to offer solutions that address this first, followed by everything else. Speed is still important, cost is still important, but having something that's a sustainable solution or a sustainable, you know, if they lead, others will follow. And they're trying to kind of set the stage for maybe a shift in me as a consumer. Maybe I have to start also thinking about, is getting that toothpaste in 2 hours really important, right? Maybe I could, you know, think about what I need and a mindset that says, hey, let me give that order 2 or 3 days to come, right? Let's make sure that the right thing is done. So I think
depends on how bad your breath is, I guess.
Well, that is very true. That is absolutely true. So I think there's a lot of goodness, and I love the fact that you're thinking about this and others are, and I think the next couple of years are going to be really interesting as this problem gets addressed.
I'm incredibly optimistic. Even in the last, like, you know, 24 months, seeing companies go from green sustainability initiatives that make them feel good versus digging in and getting serious. It's like night and day. It's really, I think, cause for optimism. If there's, you know, anything the logistics community can do to do our part, I'm very optimistic.
Just to add to that, right? It's not just at the logistics level, right? Even consumers, consumers are extremely conscious of what they are buying and the carbon footprint that they are generating. So someone utilizing cartonization down at a warehouse level can create good visibility right at the product page where the consumer is purchasing, or right at the checkout page, to say, listen, this is going to be cartonized this way. This is the carbon footprint we will generate. And here's the carbon offset initiatives that we are undertaking, right? And again, I would say that's at least the minimum we can do. And yes, we need to reduce, we need to, you know, pull it back a little bit more, but create visibility. From a business perspective, you're going to see less cart abandonment at that point as well. I think you could directly tie that to a statistical model that would say, if you were to show the consumer what the footprint's going to be, and you are going to say, how are you going to reduce it? I think there is a bite on it. There is definitely, the consumer's probability of checking out is higher.
No question. Especially these brands that have sustainability kind of like core to their brand. You know, it's a little disappointing. I think Amazon tried this where they were encouraging shipping slower, because slower is greener in pretty much 99.9% of cases. And there wasn't a lot of engagement there. But that's because I don't go to Amazon if I don't need something until next week. I go there in, you know, for toothpaste or whatever when I really need it, you know. But I don't want the industry to look at that not working or not being a huge success and take it to mean it won't work for them. I think people that are consciously buying directly from merchants are a different kind of consumer in general. Much probably more willing to consider sharing some of the pain of a more sustainable shipment to them by waiting an extra day or whatever it is.
Makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, James, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Really enjoyed having you on the show and wanted to give you an opportunity to share with our audience where they could find you on social media and the best way they could follow you and your content.
Sure. Most of my content's on LinkedIn, so find me there, connect with me. If you want to talk about boxes, that's what I have been thinking about my entire adult life. So I'm happy to chat. Our website's packurate.io. You should go check it out. If you're a developer, you can play with the API in as fast as 30 seconds. And we can help you measure the opportunity without, you know, trying to get too salesy on you. We can help you measure the opportunity for efficiency in your packing step for free. So come talk to us.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, James.
Thank you, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to maximize your supply chain. Available on all major podcasting channels. Thank you for listening, and see you in the next episode.